Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Bloomberg Crypto, a daily Bloomberg iHeart podcast.
And I'm Mike Regan, in today for Stacey Marie Ishmael. It's Tuesday, January 31st. The bankruptcy of crypto exchange FTX and the arrest of its former CEO, Sam Bankman-Fried, have obviously had a lasting effect on the digital asset sector. But it's also made an indelible impact on the politicians and policymakers who are supposed to regulate the industry. There already was a fire lit under some lawmakers when it comes to imposing regulations on crypto. Last year, President Biden issued an executive order asking agencies to take coordinated action on digital assets. And in the summer, Senators Cynthia Lummis and Kristen Gillibrand issued a bipartisan crypto bill that, among other things, would step up oversight on stablecoins and crypto energy usage. And then there is the ongoing debate between the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Commodities Futures Trading Commission over whether cryptocurrencies should be regulated as securities or commodities. But with an ongoing wave of crypto bankruptcies linked to FTX, government officials are confronted with a new sense of urgency surrounding digital asset regulation. Here to talk about this are Bloomberg reporters Ali Verspiel and Lydia Bayoud. Ali, Lydia, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
So, Ali, now that one of the largest crypto exchanges has collapsed, has that changed the debate on regulation? What's changed in the conversations among regulators after FTX?
You know, so I'll say that there's definitely a lot more urgency in the conversations that we're hearing, both at regulators, at groups like the Financial Stability Oversight Council, which is led by Treasury, at, you know, the lawmaker level. You're definitely seeing a lot more skepticism and, you know, talks about trying to, you know, maybe put some new rules in place. For instance, Senator Sherrod Brown, who's the chairman of the Senate Banking Committee, you know, he recently sent a letter to Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen saying, you know, we'd like to work with the agencies to put out a crypto oversight framework of some sort. You know, so you're definitely seeing those conversations happen. You know, to some extent, we were seeing a little bit of the conversation into last year. You know, there was some turmoil before FTX, and obviously FTX was a huge event, though. And so, you know, there have been talks ongoing about regulating stablecoins and potentially, you know, offering broader rules as well. I think now we're going to see a lot of focus on things like fraud, things like protecting customer assets. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out going forward.
And just to add on the CFTC side, there's also been, I think, more interest using, again, FTX as this kind of marquee example of what can go wrong. The CFTC is also interested as, you know, Congress is considering ways to change and bring more direct regulation of these exchanges into being. You know, they have testified, the chair has testified, and other commissioners there have testified that they're really limited in their ability to kind of like look through, you know, if there's a U.S. entity, like FTX actually had a derivatives exchange that was regulated here by the CFTC, but they weren't able to look through to the international exchange and kind of see that there's this constellation of subsidiaries and sister companies, and they're not able to kind of find out all the corporate governance stuff, you know, barring having a whistleblower tip or some reason to bring any sort of investigation or enforcement action. And, you know, they've flagged that that's potentially an issue for this very specific market. And there were some recent speeches where commissioners have asked Congress to, you know, consider that fact as they're trying to perhaps address some of the lessons learned from FTX's and other companies' collapse this past year.
Lydia, how about from the CFTC end? Is there any new sense of urgency, any new priorities, do you think?
Yeah, so I think what was notable in the sort of immediate fallout of FTX's bankruptcy is that the chair of the CFTC had to come before the Senate Ag Committee, which is a committee where he'd actually been a senior staffer at one point, and testify about their oversight of kind of a smaller player within the FTX universe that had been seeking to do an interesting derivatives trading operation with cryptocurrency. And had never progressed, but also FTX was kind of in many ways seen as aligned with the CFTC and was helping push legislation that would have given it a lot more authority in a way that other players in the crypto community thought might also be beneficial to them. Since that happened, and it was kind of noticeable that the SEC didn't have so much scrutiny from the Hill in terms of getting kind of hauled up there to testify. So since then, I think that the CFTC has been very keen to make the case that, you know, we can be a strong regulator in this space and sort of trying to dismantle this perception that they were really closely aligned with Sam Bankman-Fried and FTX. And it's also given more ammunition to the SEC to say, like, hey, we should be a strong regulator in this space.
You know, it's interesting to me because in the early years of crypto, it seemed almost like the SEC and the CFTC, at least the appearance was, neither one of them wanted to go near it. They didn't think it was their problem. But now they're both on the case. Do you get the impression, Lydia, that going forward, they will continue to sort of double team the space, that there won't be, you know, one more aggressive than the other?
Well, Ali touched on the letter from Senator Round to the Treasury Department asking for a whole of government approach to regulate this space. And so I think that the regulators, at least publicly, are coalescing behind that notion that, like, we can all play a role here. But I think that the SEC ultimately, because they're trying to claim so much jurisdiction, and I think with FTX really falling apart, there are some jurisdictional issues on the Hill where some of the banking committees want to be sure that they have kind of direct oversight of the regulator that itself would have oversight of the community. And so there's still some jurisdictional battles to play out.
Right. And, you know, it's not just FTX these days. We've obviously had this fallout with these crypto high-yield savings program offered by Gemini. In turn, Gemini turned over customer assets to Genesis to invest. Ali, has that created a new focus at all for regulators? Do you think these sort of high yield savings and loan programs that go on in crypto, is that a priority now, do you believe?
So, you know, what's interesting is that's actually been a priority for probably at least a year now. You know, we had a Bloomberg story actually last January that talked about, you know, some of these what you call crypto lenders being under scrutiny at the SEC. And so it's been sort of a long time priority. You know, you're now seeing a lot of those cases come out. You mentioned Gemini Genesis. We also recently had an enforcement action against Nexo. BlockFi, there was an enforcement action earlier last year. And so it's definitely a focus. I think one of the criticisms you see now from a lot of folks is, you know, why did it take so long for these, you know, enforcement actions to come? And why did it take potentially hundreds of millions of dollars to billions of dollars of investor losses before we saw any action? And so I think that's going to be kind of an interesting thread to watch going forward. You know, I am expecting the SEC to bring more cases this year. You know, all the indications that I think both Lydia and I are getting are that it's going to be a pretty active year on enforcement. So, you know, we'll have to see how that plays out. But yes, I think that definitely has been a priority.
But it also brings up the question, you know, some of these outfits are taking deposits, paying out interest on them and making loans. They sound an awful lot like crypto banks. Is there a role for banking regulators here, too? Or are they getting in on the action here among regulators?
You know, it's interesting because I had talked to people kind of making that same point. You know, why isn't this more of a banking product? And it seems like, you know, the SEC has really sort of staked its claim saying these are actually securities products. I'm not getting, you know, any real sense that the banking regulators are necessarily interested in that particular offering. So I think we'll continue to see the SEC sort of coming down on those. But I will say, I mean, there aren't really many left at this point. BlockFi's in bankruptcy, Voyager, Celsius, you know, they were victim to the crypto turmoil last year. Nexo has said it's not, you know, it's exiting its U.S. business. Coinbase at one point wanted to offer these kinds of products. And, you know, the SEC basically told them not to. And so, you know, they never really got into that business. So it's
not much to regulate anymore.
there's not much left. And I would be sort of surprised to see companies starting to get back into that as kind of like a new product they want to offer.
Yeah, and moving it back from crypto lending to just talk about the industry more broadly, I think the banking regulators have almost, I don't want to say been patting themselves on the back, but they've been quite pleased, I guess, that they haven't discovered, at least so far, they haven't discovered really much exposure in the main banking system, the traditional banking system, to crypto, and that's kind of been walled off. Ali and several other colleagues, though, has a really interesting story out recently, though, if you want to talk about the federal home loan.
Yeah. So, that, you know, this was something that's recently come to sort of the spotlight where the federal home loan banks, which were originally set up to boost sort of mortgage lending under President Herbert Hoover, purpose has sort of shifted over the years. And now, essentially, if you are a bank that has the appropriate type of collateral, which includes mortgage-backed securities, government-backed securities, things that you can buy in the market, then you're able to put that up as collateral and essentially you can get one of these loans. And so there were a lot of banks that were associated with crypto, kind of seen as crypto-friendly, Silvergate, for instance, Signature Bank. And, you know, what recently came to the fore was that they were receiving loans from these federal home loan banks. And it's raised a lot of new questions about, you know, what is really the role of these types of loans? Should there be, you know, more restrictions in place? Is this diverging too much for sort of the initial purpose? And so that's definitely been, you know, one of the things that's come up and kind of shown that crypto has seeped a little bit more into the banking sector than, you know, maybe we originally thought.
Up next, more with Bloomberg reporters Ali Verspiel and Lydia Bayoud on how the FTX collapse shifted the debate on regulation. We'll be right back.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
One thing I find very interesting about this whole topic is that prior to the collapse of FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried himself was sort of this very influential character in Washington when it came to ideas for crypto regulation. He testified before Congress for hours explaining what he thought needed to be regulated and how. Lydia, are they just ignoring all that advice now that SBF is awaiting trial? I mean, or were there good ideas there, do you think, that actually, despite what happened, maybe he was right about?
SBF definitely had an influence, but he was just one voice among many. And it's interesting because they put themselves out there as, you know, we're going to do crypto the right way. We embrace regulation. And it was interesting to see some of his remarks in the immediate aftermath of bankruptcy, where he was casting some doubt on his, you know, rosy view of regulation. But folks at the CFTC and on the Hill have testified, and also I think the SEC, but certainly at the CFTC, like, he was all over that agency. And they really tried to bend Congress and the Hill to sort of their perspective of how to regulate the space. But there was also a lot of pushback on it that was also, I think, lawmakers, staff, and the regulators were taking that into account. I think Ali can probably speak to that somewhat as well in terms of, you know, some of the exchanges that aren't centralized and what their view was and their pushback, as well as, you know, there was some pretty blockbuster congressional hearings with Terry Duffy taking very negative view of what Sam wanted to do in sort of a disintermediated derivatives trading for crypto.
Right. Well, what do you think, Ali? I mean, SBF is such a sort of radioactive name right now. Any idea he had back then now considered off limits, do you think?
So, you know, it's really interesting. I mean, one of the legislative efforts that he was a most vocal supporter of was this bill from the Senate Ag Committee leaders, Debbie Stabenow and John Bozeman. And essentially, that was the bill to give the CFTC oversight of certain types of tokens that could be considered commodities. You know, they specifically named Bitcoin and Ether. And so it's interesting because it's not necessarily just a Sam idea. Even the Financial Stability Oversight Council has come out with a report saying there's a lack of regulation of tokens that aren't securities, so Bitcoin. It didn't specifically name the CFTC as being the regulator, but you can kind of put two and two together. Because basically, right now, there's no federal overseer of those. It's all regulated at the state level. And so that idea, I think there is some backing that some sort of gap needs to be filled there. But I do think for any legislation that Sam was closely involved in or a big supporter of, you know, lawmakers are going to have to take a second look, make sure that it's as strong as they might want it to be, make sure there aren't any, you know, holes. So I think it's definitely tainted the efforts where they stand. But I wouldn't necessarily be surprised if we saw policymakers reworking some of that and then putting it out, you know, putting it out in sort of a slightly different form.
Walk us through where they do draw that line between what type of crypto is considered a security and what's considered a commodity. Now, I know it's not a hard and fast rule right now, but where do they seem to be drawing that distinction? Is it as simple as if a coin pays a yield, they consider it a security? Is it more complex than that?
So it's a little more complex. I mean, the distinction lies in this 1946 Supreme Court ruling, you know, the Howey test, if you will, and it kind of has four prongs. You know, there has to be an investment of money in a common enterprise with the expectation of profiting from the efforts of an organization's leadership. And so the SEC will say, we think most digital assets fit into this category, whereas crypto firms will often say, well, we think our tokens are, you know, decentralized, where there is no kind of central leadership making decisions. And, you know, that's been one of the big issues at the center of the SEC's case against Ripple over its XRP token. It's not very clear. So that will be something that would be interesting to see if lawmakers decide to weigh in on it.
It's that securities versus commodities definition is kind of like the toughest nut to crack for all the policymakers here to kind of move this issue forward and sort of designating who gets to regulate what. But, you know, when we move to the legal venue, I think as far as I can recall, and Ali mentioned the Ripple case, but so far only Bitcoin has like a court ruling behind it saying this one's a commodity. Everything else still seems kind of up in the air, at least in terms of, you know, here is a court order making a decision. What is interesting and something to watch, though, is the SEC brought this case that Ali and I covered last year against an executive at Coinbase who was allegedly sending insider trading tips to a friend and a family member. And in that complaint, the SEC made these declarations. I think it was 9 tokens that were listed on Coinbase. They claimed that they were securities. And you can imagine that this Coinbase wasn't super thrilled about this designation in this court filing. And, you know, if eventually, because there's also a criminal component, which is going to move first through court, but eventually if this civil part from the SEC, you know, gets decided by a judge, that could also bring, certainly for those tokens, more clarity to the space.
What are the leaders of the industry like Coinbase? What's their perspective on all of this?
You know, I think definitely the vast majority would rather have their tokens be labeled commodities. You know, a lot will say, though, like they wouldn't mind working with the SEC trying to register, but they would claim that, you know, the SEC is not working with them, that it's not, you know, taking too much of a hardline approach, and that they're having a tough time coming to agreement. Whereas obviously the SEC will say, well, we think there's a lot of illegal activity happening in this space. And so it's hard to know what exactly is the true narrative here. But I would say in terms of pushing legislation, a lot of the crypto industry was behind this bill to give the CFTC more authority. The one exception being the decentralized finance community, which, you know, they felt that the bill was gave too much of an advantage to centralized exchanges like Coinbase, like at the time FTX. They were in opposition to that legislation.
Well, I think we'll leave it at that. I know, ladies, you are super busy, and we really appreciate your time. Hopefully no news broke while we were sitting here talking. I don't want to jinx it.
You never know in crypto. I mean, it's constant.
It's no sleep on this beat.
That's right.
Ali Verspiel and Lydia Bayoud, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You can find more of their reporting on the Bloomberg Terminal and Bloomberg.com. For more, be sure to check out our twice-weekly newsletter, Bloomberg Crypto.
This is Bloomberg Crypto, a daily podcast from Bloomberg and iHeartRadio. For more shows from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Send us your comments, questions, or suggestions for the show to crypto@bloomberg.net. The supervising producer of Bloomberg Crypto is Vicky Vergolina. Our senior producer is Janet Babin. Our producers are Mohammed Farouk and Sharon Bariro. Our associate producers are Ty Butler and Moses Undum. Desta Wonderad is our engineer. Original music by Leo Sidran. I'm Stacey Marie Ishmael. We'll be back tomorrow.
Join us in Chicago or virtually on May 2nd for Bloomberg's Business Value of AI event and networking reception. This event will gather business and technology executives to share their experiences and provide insights into their strategies for deploying AI that achieves a desirable ROI. You'll also learn how companies have successfully implemented AI solutions that have improved productivity and profitability. This program is proudly sponsored by IBM. Register at BloombergLive.com/AI/radio.